This is The Pulse, stories at the heart of health, science, and innovation. I'm Maiken Scott. Last Friday afternoon, I got up from my desk and I walked over to the printer. I looked up at the television that hangs in our newsroom. I was kind of hoping to catch a glimpse of the soccer game between Germany and France, but you know what I saw instead.
This is an NBC News special report. Here's Lester Holt.
We're coming on the air to tell you about a situation unfolding right now in Paris where there have been a number of apparent attacks.
I checked Facebook. One of my French friends had simply posted, "Quelle horreur." I was born and raised in Germany, so I started texting friends who live in France. I stared at my Twitter feed. I felt sad and shocked and angry, scared. Of course, I wasn't alone.
And then I went to the gym after work
and saw something on the TV with a breaking news update.
I think I saw something on Twitter. I guess, luckily, most of the people I knew who were in Paris kind of updated on Facebook.
Facebook had already started using the I'm safe tool, and Twitter was going crazy with the hashtag porte ouverte.
My Facebook friends started changing their profile pictures in solidarity. So did yours, I'm sure. All week, I listened to the radio bringing us the latest from Paris, a city in mourning.
But this is a Monday morning like no other. News has been breaking this morning about the attacks that were carried out.
I looked at pictures of the victims. I wondered why they were all so beautiful. Almost immediately after the attacks, another thing started happening, though. It's to some extent an age of the 24-hour news cycle and social media phenomenon. And in happier days, I refer to it as think piece bingo. You probably know what I'm talking about. After any event of consequence, we almost immediately start dissecting what it means. We discuss and endlessly hash out how we should think about it. Somebody opines, "Here is what this means." "Not at all," comes the response almost right away. "Well, how about this? Nonsense." And on it goes. We argue, we bicker, we leave nasty comments, and we unfriend each other. Now here's a question for you, a theory. What if all of this behavior was really motivated by our fear of death? I've had a book on my desk for a while. Reporter Alana Gordon had urged me to take a look at it. It's called The Worm at the Core, on the Role of Death in Life. And it builds on the thinking of cultural anthropologist Ernest Becker.
And what Becker argued is that people are unique in all of the animal kingdom because we are so smart that we actually realize that we exist.
Becker died in 1974. This is Sheldon Solomon. He is a professor of psychology at Skidmore College, and he wrote that book on my desk together with a few colleagues. Knowing that we exist is good, but
it's also terrifying because it makes us realize that we're going to die someday, that we could die at any time, and that really we're no significantly more enduring than lizards or potatoes.
Imagine if our inevitable death was the only thing we thought about. How could we function? So Solomon and his colleagues built on Becker's work and developed terror management theory. It argues that we find ways to minimize our existential terror. One way to do that is to embrace strong beliefs about the world around us, to give it order and meaning, to be part of a tribe or a nation that will persist over time. Immortality of sorts. And because there's so much at stake here, we will go to extraordinary lengths to maintain faith in our beliefs. Solomon set out to test this theory in experiments.
What we thought was actually very simple, and that is that if Becker's right, if our beliefs serve to minimize death anxiety, then we thought, well, what would happen if we reminded people of their mortality, perhaps by asking them to think about themselves dying, maybe by interviewing them in front of a funeral parlor? And so, for example, in one of our first experiments, we had Christian participants either reminded of death or something unpleasant, and then we asked them to judge other students who reported that they came either from Christian or Jewish families. And in the control condition, the students didn't differentiate between the target individuals based on their religion. However, when they were reminded of their death first, They liked fellow Christians a lot more, and they disliked Jewish targets a lot more. And that basic finding has nothing to do with Christianity. For example, we did some studies in Iran a decade ago where Iranians, reminded of their mortality, became more enthusiastic about suicide bombing and more willing to become a martyr themselves.
And Sheldon, how did you see this theory play out on Facebook, on social media, after the Paris attacks?
Well, I think it played out exactly as terror management theory would predict, and that is an outpouring of support and patriotism and national pride for the French and the Western democratic way of life. And of course, there's nothing wrong with that. More perniciously problematic, however, is the reflexive hostility and disdain for anything that is associated with Islam.
Is this always a bad thing, though? If I'm convinced that my way of life is the right way of life, and it will keep me alive, it will keep future generations alive, is it perhaps not about terror management in the sense that I'm afraid of my death, but that I want myself and others to go on living?
Yes, I think that's an absolutely good point, and one that we would not dispute. On the other hand, one of the things that Ernest Becker pointed out is that no culturally constructed vision of reality is ever capable of completely eradicating death anxiety. He called it a panic lurking beneath the surface of consciousness. And what we do with that residual death anxiety is to repress it, and then we project it onto other individuals that we declare the all-encompassing repository of evil. So the question is not so much, is it a bad thing to be proud of our way of life, but what's the psychological and physical toll that that pride takes on those around us, if that makes sense?
Since reading your book, I've been thinking a lot about my typical reactions. If, for example, I hear that somebody died in a car accident, my first question is often, did they wear a seatbelt? If I hear about somebody dying from a heart attack, I will ask, well, how old were they? Did they live a healthy life? So is this all about, I never quite thought about why I asked those questions, but now I'm thinking I want to assess my own risk here, right?
Well, I think that's quite right. And without claiming that everything that people do and think about is tied to death anxiety, we're pretty sure that lots of it is. And when you read about, you know, someone having a heart attack or dying in a car accident, you know, that makes thoughts of death very conscious. And one way to assuage our own anxiety, you know, is to hope that the person in the car accident wasn't wearing a seatbelt. And that the guy who had the heart attack, was choking on a half dozen donuts and so on. In the hopes that there's a rational explanation for those fatalities that might in turn imply that if we behave otherwise, we could be spared that fate.
And that's not really possible with terror attacks.
That's right. They're specifically designed, and they do it quite well, to tear a gaping hole in the delicate, culturally constructed fabric of meaning that we each rely on to stand up in the morning. And what all terrorist attacks do is to really hit us with kind of a 1-2 punch of death reminders. One is the very real physical danger that those acts pose to any of us. And then there's the psychological affront of realizing that our way of life is being challenged both physically and psychologically.
I saw a lot of conversation on social media about, look at you, everybody is all upset about Paris, but when the same thing happened in Beirut, nobody cared. And I wondered about that sentiment in regards to terror management theory, because I'm wondering if we are more likely to be affected by things that happen to people who are more like us.
Well, absolutely. We don't have to necessarily be happy with this fact, but it is still a fact, you know, that humans are territorial and tribal animals. And, you know, in fact, there's some research that suggests that when disasters befall other people who we consider to be our enemies, that actually helps assuage our own death anxieties.
What do we do about this? We can't do away with the fear of death. It's part of us. But is being aware of it, does that make it better if I know, oh, this is just my fear of death?
The question, the way we see it, is not getting rid of death anxiety, but understanding that when death anxiety becomes problematic is when we repress it and we're no longer conscious of it. And then it's manifested in ways that bear unfortunate psychological fruit, like when we despise people who are different.
Sheldon, thank you so much.
Thank you.